It is the Blitz, Monday to Friday, 2:30 to 4 here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. He hops on every week. We're always appreciative for his time. Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune, our guest this afternoon. Find his podcast network at mnspn.com. This segment, as always, is brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. Thank you, as always, Jim. It feels like the Vikings haven't played in about a month. It was last Thursday, Thanksgiving in Detroit. I know you were in attendance. So during the game, after the game, how was Thanksgiving in the city of Detroit for Jim Suhan?
Well, there was a time I would have made a joke about being in Detroit for Thanksgiving. I will say that, as someone who thinks Detroit should be a great city, it is making a comeback. It was lit up. It was dressed up. There's a lot of activity downtown with the Lions. They have a great ballpark now. They have a new hockey arena. They have a theater. They have a casino. It's not bad. And I like the football stadium. So it was actually kind of my wife came with me, and we enjoyed it. So I'm not going to make any Detroit jokes, and I hope I never have to make a Detroit joke again, because it should be a great American city.
The Vikings certainly enjoyed their trip. They come out on top with the victory against the Lions. Case Keenum played very well, 2 passing touchdowns, 1 rushing, no interceptions. I'm wondering, is the leash for Case Keenum perhaps longer, as in if he were to lay a dud, Jim, against Atlanta or Carolina in one of the 2 upcoming road games, I'm under the impression he should probably still start going forward. Are you of the same mind that that leash might be a little looser with him now?
I think he's earned more benefit of the doubt with each passing week. And I'll also say that there have been times where you can say, okay, boy, Shurmur had a great game. The offensive line had a great game. Case didn't have to do too much. I think against Detroit, the offensive line did not have a very good game, and he made plays anyway. I thought the 22-yard touchdown pass to Rudolph with a guy coming free and smashing him was a perfectly thrown pass. I think that was a big play, and that's also the kind of play that buys you a lot of trust from your teammates and your coaches. I think at this point, and I've talked to some people in the organization about it, I think it's pretty simple at this point. They don't see any upside other than making fans feel good, which is always a terrible reason to do anything in sports. These fans can change their mind in 2 seconds. Other than making fans feel good, there's just no upside to committing to Case long term. You just keep playing him. Case has played great under these circumstances. If you come out and say, Case is our guy the rest of the way, and then Case slumps, he starts throwing interceptions all the time, starts costing you games, and then you decide to bench him, well, now you've had to go back on your word, and you look really bad, and you've caused a problem when there, and you might have even changed his psychology. Right now, he's trying to prove himself, and he's playing great on a weekly basis. Maybe if you tell him, hey, it's your job, maybe he starts thinking about his next contract. Maybe he plays just a little bit differently, and that costs you. There's absolutely no upside, no reason to say he's our guy other than to make fans happy. And I don't know why fans care so much about that.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Case Keenum was named the NFC Player of the Month. Adam Thielen is right near the top in the fan vote for the Pro Bowl. Who, in Jim Suhan's eyes, has been more of a pleasant surprise this year? Is it Keenum or is it Adam Thielen?
Oh, I think Keenum's been the bigger surprise. Thielen's been great, but I thought he'd be really good this year. He's been probably even better than I expected, but I thought he was a really good player. I think that Keenum, let's face it, this is a guy who couldn't keep starting jobs 2 other places, who was allowed to leave by 2 other NFL organizations in a league where everybody's desperate for quarterbacks. The Houston Texans haven't, Deshaun Watson, other than Deshaun Watson turning it on earlier this year before he got hurt, the Texans have been looking for a quarterback their entire franchise history, and they let him go. So, if you compare his numbers to other people who were available out there, including Colin Kaepernick's, he didn't look very good. So the fact that Case Keenum is playing this well for this long when it matters for a winning team is still fairly shocking.
Find his work in the Star Tribune, his podcast network at mnspn.com. Jim Suhan is our guest this afternoon here on the Blitz. It's brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. Vikings in Atlanta this weekend. Everyone is talking about the Xavier Rhodes-Julio Jones matchup. Do you expect Xavier to shadow Julio, and how do you see that matchup shaking out if Xavier is kind of just shadowing him around the field? Julio had 1 touchdown all year entering last week, and then he sort of had that blowout game that we see from him once in a while where he has double-digit receptions. He goes over 200 yards, I think, for like the 3rd time in his career, and he had 2 touchdown catches. So I don't know if that was more of an outlier game for him. Certainly you can't expect him to replicate that going forward, but it could be a sign of things to come that Steve Sarkisian is starting to get Julio more involved.
Yeah, and Julio, I think, has more 250-yard receiving games than anybody in NFL history. When he gets hot, he's unbelievable. I can't say he's the best receiver in the NFL, but he's the receiver you would build if you were in a laboratory. Mm-hmm. He's big, strong, fast. He runs great routes. He's tough. He can play physically. He can block downfield. He's a good teammate. He's very well respected and liked by that entire organization. He doesn't ever say anything stupid. He's really ideal in a lot of ways. And Xavier is having a tremendous season, but he did not have a great game on Thursday in Detroit. Maybe his calf was still bothering him. He got beat by Marvin Jones a couple times, who is a good player. So it'll be interesting to see how he matches up. Obviously, he did very well against Antonio Brown early in the season. Antonio's a small, quick guy. Julio, it's going to be more of two big, strong guys really battling for the ball. I don't know who you give the advantage to. A lot of it probably depends on game plan and how well Matt Ryan plays and everything else. But it would be an epic matchup if Xavier does end up following him around.
Are the Falcons, are they real again? Because I can never figure out the NFL. You know, the Chiefs start 5-0. Now they're 6-5. And at that same time, the LA Chargers started 0-4. Now all of a sudden, they're just one game behind Kansas City. And for Atlanta this year, 3 weeks ago, most people were burying the Falcons. They were at 500 at 4-4. Now all of a sudden, they've won three straight, and they're apparently back in most people's eyes.
I think teams that lose the Super Bowl have a hard time getting back on their feet. I remember the 98 Vikings were a mess for about a month and a half of the next season before they rallied and made the playoffs. I think it's really hard to get as far as the Super Bowl, blow a Super Bowl, and then or any big game, any big playoff game, and really kind of get it going again the next year. So I think that the Falcons are kind of getting back on their feet. I think they're adjusting to Sarkisian instead of Kyle Shanahan as their play caller. And it's still a good team. It's still a really good team. So I think the Vikings are probably catching them at the wrong time.
How many of the teams in the hunt, and this might be an unfair one to throw your way, but how many of the teams in the hunt just in the NFC do you view, Jim, as legitimate Super Bowl caliber? Because right now, I mean, everyone's like, Philly's the talk of the league right now, but you got the Vikings, the Rams, the Saints, the Seahawks, Panthers, Falcons are all kind of out there doing their thing, and I know a lot of them still have head-to-head matchups, Vikings, Atlanta this week, Saints, Panthers, Saints, Falcons still play each other. How many of those teams that are in the hunt do you look at and say, yeah, I think they're Super Bowl caliber?
I think there are about six or seven teams in the NFC that I could see making a run and going to the Super Bowl. I think there are really only two AFC teams that really look like Super Bowl teams to me, and that's the Patriots and the Steelers. Maybe the Chargers will make a run, but those are the two teams that do it for me. NFC, Philadelphia separated itself, but it also has played a fairly easy schedule. They passed the eye test. They look really good. They look like they can beat you a lot of different ways. They look like they have depth, but they still got to prove themselves more in my eyes. Vikings are there. I think the Saints have turned it on and become a very difficult team to play against. I think the Falcons are as good as anybody. I think the Panthers can be as good as anybody. The Seahawks just seem beat up, but I always hate to bet against them. I might be leaving somebody
out. The
Rams. And the Rams are very good. They beat the Saints last week. Other than the Eagles, I really don't like anybody in the East, but I mean, I think I just named six or seven teams. I think those teams are all legitimate.
Keys for the Vikings Sunday against the Falcons would be what? What do they need to do to come out with another win?
I think that they need to find – the Falcons have a pretty good pass rush, and they're playing at home in a loud environment. The Vikings have to find some way to deal with that pass rush, whether it's Keenum scrambling, whether it's screens and draws, whether it's keeping extra tight ends and backs in, as Shurmur will do in certain matchups. I think the skill position players have proven if they have time to make plays, they're going to make plays. So it's defeating the rush in one way or another. And on the other side of the ball, I really do think it's, Devontae Freeman might be back, and he can be a monster. So I think it's keeping the Falcons from big plays on the ground and keeping Julio from destroying you.
We always love having him on the program, Jim Suhan, with us this afternoon here on AM 1450. Find his work in the Star Tribune, the podcast network, with tons and tons of constant content being churned out at MNSPN.com. It's brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. Let's bop over to Tom Thibodeau's squad, the Wolves. And maybe I'm being too harsh. I was fairly disappointed, Jim, with the 2-2 homestand. They lost by a dozen to the Heat, and then they lost to the John Wallace Wizards. And I recognize that Teague and Nemanja Bjelica were out for Minnesota, but we are talking about John freaking Wall. He's a superstar in this league. He was out for Washington, and they still left Target Center. It was an ugly win, but a win for the Wizards nonetheless. I was fairly disappointed with the 2-2 homestand.
Agreed. I think it should have been at least 3-1. The Heat, I really felt like Spoelstra outcoached Thibodeau in that game. I don't think you should lose to the Heat at home if you have championship, any kind of playoff aspirations. And then I thought the loss against Washington was embarrassing. They blew a big lead. Towns didn't play any defense. Wiggins floated. It was a bad loss. But this is why I don't bet on sports. They blow a big lead at home to an average Washington team without its superstar, which makes no sense. They play their starters all 34 minutes or more. So, of course, going to New Orleans on the second night of a back-to-back to play a good team, that's a loss, right? No, they blow out New Orleans and Anthony Davis gets thrown. So the fact that they won a game that looked like a scheduled loss in New Orleans kind of makes up for losing to Washington. Of course, if you're an ambitious team, you want both of those games.
You added the interesting caveat in there for last night. The Wolves did rebound an 18-point win against New Orleans, but it is hard to not notice that Anthony Davis, he's got 17 points in 18 minutes. He's rolling along. And, Jim, yep. Once he got ejected, Jim, it kind of changed the course of the game. I think the Wolves went on like a 15-2 run.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the key to the game, no question about it. I did like the Wolves' offensive flow a lot better on Tuesday than I did on Monday. They just seemed to be moving the ball a lot better. But you're right. If Anthony Davis stays in that game, who knows what happens?
Wolves sitting at 13-9, they're fifth in the West. How would you summarize the Wolves' season? We're a fourth of the way through it. Are you more confident than you are concerned with what you've seen?
Boy, that's the thing. I don't think there's really much wrong with the record or where they are in the standings. Some of the losses have been kind of disgusting. Some of the losses, you go, oh, God, that's not the way it's supposed to work. That looks like a team's disconnected from each other or its coach. Looks like they don't know where to go for a big shot. Looks like they don't know how to play defense together. So if you told me what the record would be at this juncture, I'd say, okay, that sounds about right. But watching it unfold, I just think that there are too many defensive lapses for a team with a renowned defensive coach and very good athletic ability on the court. I still think that the defense is a problem. And I think if you watch Jimmy Butler's body language around locker room and during some of those losses, he's disgusted sometimes by what he sees.
Yeah, the defense is what I think a lot of people keep circling back around to. The Wolves are still giving up the fourth most points to the opposition in the Western Conference. Do you think this is going to become the norm, or when does the defense start to show some consistency? It's weird because it's what Tom Thibodeau is known for. It's his bread and butter being a defensive-minded coach.
Right, and that is the concern, is that you bring in Taj Gibson and Jimmy Butler. They both play well defensively for you, and yet your defense overall is still terrible. That, to me, points the finger right at Towns, especially. I don't think Towns and Tibbs are on the same page defensively. And that's not a crisis yet, but if it doesn't get fixed, it will be at some point.
Jim Suhan with us this afternoon of the Star Tribune Podcast Network, can be located at MNSPN.com. It's brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. We'll finish up quickly with the Gophers football season. It might be, again, a bit too harsh. Thankfully, I think it wrapped up Saturday, 31-0 loss to Wisconsin. They get outscored the final two games at Northwestern, at home against the Badgers, 70-0. Did it appear to you, I just thought as I was watching that game Saturday against Wisconsin, Jim, based off the play calling, I'm not saying the players quit or gave up for Minnesota, strictly based off the offensive play calling, it appeared to me that Minnesota just wanted that game to get over as quickly as possible.
Last two games, I felt that was the case. And that's the thing, is that it's fine to build for the future, it's fine to talk about the future, but when you basically admit publicly that you're really not that invested in this year's team, and you got a bunch of college kids who get down on the scoreboard. Again, like you said, I'm not going to say anybody quit, but playing at a high level athletically requires a lot of emotional investment. And I'm not sure the emotional investment is fully going to be there for a coach who's basically said, these guys aren't very good. I'm not going to be able to win this year. It's a bad position to put your team in. Doesn't mean PJ won't be a good coach here long term, but he didn't handle this year very well.
We'll wrap it up on this. Would you describe Gopher fans, if I had to try to trace the pulse of the fan base, would you describe them as more optimistic or pessimistic about Fleck after 1 year? Where do you think the majority lies? Because it is just one season, and I've always advocated, especially for college coaches, you got to give them time to get their own recruits in and let it sort of maturate that way. But how would you describe the fan base, more pessimistic or optimistic?
The weird thing about the Gopher fan base, and maybe even more so than other fan bases I've been around, is I think you have a certain percentage that will believe anything, will buy into anything, including Tim Brewster. And then you have the realists are like, okay, this program has been down for a few decades. It's going to take a lot to turn it around, and I'm not. And it annoys me that somebody is talking about Rose Bowls and championships when can't even put one good season together. And frankly, I'm somewhere in the middle. I think PJ is a good coach. I don't think he's handled things very well or handled his public persona very well here yet. Doesn't mean he's not going to win eventually. I just don't think he's cast. I don't think the way he's used words has been very helpful to his program so far.
Find his work in the Star Tribune, Podcast Network, MNSPN.com. Jim, thank you as always for the time.
Hey, thanks, Mitch.
The long-awaited Jim Mora playoff segment, next.